Hi, my name is Anna Vogt, and I am a double major senior in psychology and women's gender and sexuality studies. Today is Monday, the 19th of November, 2018. I am here today together with Bobby Douglas and Rhiannon Whalen-Harris from 180, an organization in Wayne and Holmes County. First, could you tell me about your organization, 180? What does your organization do?
So 180 is a behavioral healthcare facility, and we provide intervention, prevention, clinical services, residential services. We can get into talking about all the specifics of that if you want to, or that's just kind of the real general overview.
I was just going to say our mission is helping people change direction. And the six major areas that we deal with are domestic violence, sexual assault, addiction, both treatment and prevention, housing, and mental health.
So what are both of your roles within 180?
This is Bobby, and I'm the executive director.
And Rhiannon, I'm the community relations and prevention director.
So you said that you could talk a little bit more about the more specific things you do within the organization. So what are those?
So in terms of like the sexual assault programming or the programming for domestic violence, we have a whole series of different services that are available. So we have our shelter, and that is a 24-hour crisis shelter where individuals who have experienced forms of violence can stay. We have a whole victim services department that is a part of that particular programming, and individuals that we refer to as victim advocates are a part of those services. So really being able to help people understand what sort of options are available for them if they've experienced violence. That programming also has very specific prevention services. So we're out in the schools doing healthy relationship programming.
Men Working for Change.
Mm-hmm, the Men Working for Change program, which is very much connected to the college here. So that has really had sustainability because of individuals from the college. Those are people who become part of the education and awareness programming within the community, really recognizing that the more that we have men speaking out against those issues, then the more likely it is that we're going to be able to actually change some of the social norms that we see that unfortunately tend to encourage or allow those issues within our society. We also have a 24-hour crisis hotline that is a part of those services, so people can call really at any time for any reason, you know, if they're really in need of help or if they have questions or they need to talk to somebody. We then as well have the substance abuse and addiction services, and you may keep going.
No, I can pick up. I was going to say with around the issues of sexual assault and domestic violence, we do have counseling available too for people that need that additional help. Not everybody does, but some do. And we also have programming for kids who are witnessing violence. We really believe that, you know, in terms of prevention, these kids are incredibly high risk to perpetrate it into the next generation. So we're hopeful that if we intervene with them now, that won't happen. In terms of our addiction programs, we have a pretty extensive prevention department that works a lot with community coalitions, youth mentoring programs. We try very hard. Prevention's one of those things that's really misunderstood oftentimes about what is really effective in terms of preventing alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use. So we try to really focus in on things we know that are likely to work. We have a whole continuum of care of services available for people who may start to experience problems in their lives because of their alcohol, tobacco, or other drug use. But both pre-addiction. There may be problems like drunk driving or different things like that. But certainly for people who have crossed the line into addiction, we have a wide range of services, starting with assessment and outpatient services through residential treatment options. And then we try to provide a lot of supportive activities out the back end of treatment to help people sustain their recovery. Along with that, I'll just add, we do have what we call a supportive services department, but the main portion of that works on people around housing issues. We do have recovery housing for people in recovery, but also just trying to prevent evictions and getting people rapidly rehoused into housing if they've lost their housing.
So 180 officially established in 2016 out of a collaboration of multiple organizations, correct?
Yes, but the drug and alcohol part has been around since 1974. It was first Wayne County Alcoholism Services, then it became STEPS. Every Woman's House was the domestic violence and sexual assault part, and that started in 1978. And they both have some kind of great stories about their origins, if you want to know that. But we started working together in the late 90s to renovate the building that we're housed in. I became executive director of both agencies in 1997. We continued to operate separately. Then in 2016, we officially, in 2006, we officially merged. 2016, we changed our name.
Oh, okay.
And went to one name.
So can you tell me a little bit more about the history that you mentioned?
Yeah, I'll start with the addiction, but I think you might be most interested in the one around domestic violence and sexual assault because of your work. But our addiction side of things was started by a man named Doug Pomeroy. He was a local minister in town who had a real heart for people with alcohol problems. And he did a lot of going to jails and to hospitals and pulling people off of bar stools, kind of the old way things were done, but he was relentless in trying to work to help people who had alcohol problems. He got the agency started, and then we've grown from there. In terms of the domestic violence and sexual assault, it came out of there was a group of women here in town back when consciousness raising groups were really big, and they were concerned about the issue of domestic violence. And so they worked with the police department, and they actually set up a network of safe houses. So the police would call when somebody came in, and one of these women would literally go down to the police station, pick up women and children, and take them into their own personal homes. And they did that for quite a while, and then they were doing a presentation, and Julia Fishelson, who was a local philanthropist here in town, her daughter is Ida Sue. Her father is Nick Amster, very big with the arts and different issues. But women were a big issue of hers. So she was concerned because her friends were taking people into their homes. And she told the story when we opened the new shelter that she went home and said to her husband, "I'm thinking about letting them use my mother's house," the house she had grown up in, which was right across from the old, from Cornerstone Elementary now. To use as a shelter. And he told her he didn't think that was a very good idea. And she said she thought about it and decided it was her mother's house, and her mother would have liked that. So she donated the use of her house to Every Woman's House. And before her husband died, he told her it was the best decision they ever made. But we were housed in that four-bedroom house until 1999. And at that point, we built our current shelter, which now houses up to 44 people.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I have seen from some of our archival material that you are involved with some student organizations at the College of Worcester. Do you know what projects these are, or how did they go in the past?
Well, currently we're involved with the Men Working for Change program. So that's something that we have lended our program name to here on campus. So that is officially a program house here on campus, but it's our volunteer program that I spoke about a little bit before. I know of some others in the past, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the program house program houses. We, for many, many years, had a program house of women that volunteered in the shelter. As we moved into the bigger shelter, we're not able to use volunteers in quite the same way that we did when we were smaller. But we have a long history and probably would have had a very difficult time even getting the shelter established without that volunteer help that was really critical. And I think there's been a variety of programs, too, that have worked with us around alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use. I know I personally used to do training up here about how to throw a successful party without, you know, doing things that aren't really wise. I've done a lot of, I think we over the years have done quite a bit of education mm-hmm. up here on campus. We were part of the sexual assault response team that they had up here at one point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has 180 collaborated with other local organizations in the past or currently?
We have quite a bit of collaboration within the community with different agencies and different, you know, we kind of consider ourselves to be partners with a lot of agencies within the community. So I think one of the most important things to talk about is that we're with the Mental Health and Recovery Board. And so the Mental Health and Recovery Board is a governing agency? Is it a...
They plan, fund, and monitor mental health and addiction services for Wayne and Holmes County.
So the Counseling Center is a part of that, Anazao, Catholic Charities, again, ourselves, am I missing?
NAMI.
NAMI is a part of that.
Which is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. It's the local chapter. The director of the Wayne County Community Foundation said we were the poster child for collaboration. We do very little without looking around to see who we can partner with. We're part of a number of broad collaboratives. United Way would be another one, but there's a housing coalition. We have four community coalitions in Wayne and Holmes County, the Opiate Task Force, the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Coalition, the Human Trafficking Coalition.
Suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we work quite a bit with our partners. Mm-hmm. And I think part of our kind of baseline philosophy is that it takes communities to change these problems, and we're just part of it. We can provide leadership, we can provide resources, but ultimately it takes all of us.
Does 180 have any upcoming events?
We do have one which is coming up right at the beginning of December, which is specific to it's open to the public, and it's really just recognizing how people can be more friendly in terms of hosting parties for individuals in recovery, as well as for individuals who are in recovery feel more comfortable about attending holiday celebrations and maybe, you know, making sure that their wishes are known, or, you know, that they're just prepared for what that might look like. So that's going to be at the Worcester Library here in town, an evening event, and it should be pretty fun. It's going to be pretty relaxed, desserts and, you know, some hot chocolate and those sorts of things available.
Dr. Labor, who's our addictionologist on our staff, our medical doctor, is going to be speaking at Great Decisions this year, too, which is here on campus, which I'm really excited about that. And there are just probably so many more events.
Yeah, there is a lot in the works. We're actually just coming up to sort of a you know, it's getting into the holiday time, so things are scattered out a little bit more than they normally are. But the Community Relations and Prevention Department, as well as other departments, were in a continual process of planning events. And so connecting to our website and our social media is a great way to know what we have going on, because, again, there's always something that's in the planning process.
Would 180 like to be involved with other local organizations or the college in the future, and in what ways? And do you have any initiatives in mind?
Wow, that's a big question.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is that, you know, we would definitely like to continue with the collaborations that we have, as well as, you know, grow those. Like Men Working for Change, as I said, we've had wonderful sustainability here on campus. We've watched that program grow over just the past couple of years. We're excited about the idea of it growing, and then the big goal for that is really for it to be much more community-based. And so to use the example of, you know, how successful that has been here on campus, and again, get that into the community more and get more community support around that.
We're currently, some of the big initiatives that we have going on right now are, we're bringing up, we've hired a physician as of January 1st, so we're bringing up our medical services. So that's an area where we are definitely trying to work with our community. Our physician's really good about reducing stigma. When she speaks, people get it. I had a physician say to me, after 15 years, I finally understand it. So I think that that's a piece. But we also are in the midst of a capital campaign that will be building a new women's residential treatment center. It will have 24 beds, and that will allow us to have room there for children to reside with their moms, which is often a big barrier for them coming in to care. And right now, that's about as far out as I'm seeing. I think we continue to try to add to our continuum of services that are available for folks as the need arises. And again, continuing to work with, you know, the hospital, like we're interested in working with the emergency room around the issue of addiction, and also with our local EMTs to help them, because there's so much on the front lines with people as overdoses occur and things like that. But also in terms of domestic violence, sexual assault, I should say, I mean, the hospital is one of our partners too, in terms of we have a sexual assault response team at the hospital. So I think continuing to look for those areas where we can partner with people and intervene with folks more in their own natural environment, and hopefully in a way that's less threatening to them and that they're going to be more amenable to whatever they might need in terms of services.
And I think it's such a challenging question, because we truly are always sort of in that process, always looking at, you know, what needs to be connected further within the community. Bobby mentioned the SART program, the Sexual Assault Response Team, and our partnership with the hospital. We are right now in the process of connecting with the Orville Altman Hospital as well. And so we're getting all the individuals that are trained to respond here at the Worcester Hospital also trained to respond at the Orville Hospital. So, you know, that's just one example of something that it kind of just happened organically because of the need within the community and what our connections already were.
Are there any ways in which 180 supports the LGBTQIA plus community?
That is an area of focus for us. We have some specific plans that are in place in terms of really recognizing that, you know, it's a community that we, of course, need to learn more about. We do, or a couple of years back, we were trained under the Safe Zone programming with Bravo. And so that was one of the very specific steps that we took to be more educated and better prepared as an agency in terms of response, as well as thinking about, you know, Bobby's kind of pointing out to us here, like our materials and how those are presented in a way that are more welcoming to the LGBTQIA community. But also, as I kind of said at the beginning, we don't look at those sort of underserved populations as though, you know, we just need to learn something and then we're good, you know, we're prepared. You know, it really is a process for us that we know we have to continue to learn and continue to really be aspiring allies for that particular community as well as some others.
Yeah, I would say also we do have a cultural competency group in our organization. We did a focus group with that particular population, again, to try to talk about what our needs, what our barriers to people having services. We also are a trauma-informed care organization. So the idea is, you know, I think a lot of folks in that population often have had trauma in their lives. And so I think some of the things we're doing across the board there, too, would also be helpful to anybody that's coming in from some kind of marginalized population.
Well, we've been talking a lot now about the different kinds of ways you are involved as an organization, but what kind of impact do you think 180 has on the greater Worcester community?
I hope we have a lot of impact because our community really supports us in many, many, many ways. And we use the term, we like to believe we're a trusted partner with our community. And I see that pretty broadly across all the socioeconomic groups in the organization or in the community. So even people who may not understand sometimes what we do, I think tend to believe us when we talk about what it's really like. I mean, one of the issues we're dealing with a lot right now is this homelessness population that is downtown. And I think we're looked at as a trusted partner to deal with those kinds of issues. I also think that we're considered a safe place for people who have need for our services. And I think we work very hard to be a home-like environment and something that's warm and welcoming. And I think people feel comfortable where we are. And I think ultimately know that we're a place that they can get help. I mean, we could talk on and on about our outcomes in the community and with specific people. Unfortunately, I don't think we've solved either of the problems that we're addressing. But I do think we provide a safety net to people who are experiencing those and hopefully are able to help people change their lives in a positive way so that those things aren't part of it.
What are some of the obstacles or challenges your organization is currently facing? And how do you plan on addressing these issues, if possible, in terms of collaborative events?
The biggest issue we're facing right now is probably not anything that's very interesting to talk about. There's a major change going on in the state in how we're paid for services. And it has basically turned us upside down in many ways in terms of being able to bill for services and being paid for them so that we have the funding available to continue to provide them. So I would say that's the biggest issue right now that is challenging us and taking a lot of our time. It's called behavioral health care redesign, and it's complicated and boring, but
I think it's a very relevant topic.
Mm-hmm.
Happening.
Right. They changed the way we build, basically, and then as of July 1st, moved us all under managed care, which means we now have to have pre-authorizations for treatment. It's added to our administrative burden and all those kinds of things. And so I would think that that's a big one. Stigma is always an issue for both across the board with our services and how people think about people that have these issues going on in their life until they have them going on in their life. And then, people's attitudes tend to change. So I think that that's problematic as well. I don't know what you would add, Rhianna.
I was just thinking a little bit about, how much we're hearing about the opiate epidemic. And so, trying to sort of balance that out within the agency because there are funds that are coming in, for my world in terms of prevention, I can speak to that the prevention focus is on opiates or on prescription medication. And what we know is that that's not really what youth are experimenting with. And so from more of a prevention fundamentals kind of focus, we want to talk about other substances. And so just kind of trying to balance that out, like where the funds are and what we really need to stay focused on can sometimes be a little bit off, but we find ways in terms of making it work.
I think absolutely. Dr. Labor, our physician, just talks about a drug is a drug is a drug. We need to stop talking about the opiate epidemic and be talking about addiction in general. And she's right. And we're seeing a real shift right now to methamphetamine. But the people that are dying right now, if you look at the autopsy results, are just kind of a mixed bag. They're dying from a combination of all kinds of things mixed together. So
Is there anything else you would like to mention before we end this interview?
I think I would just plug again, you know, that we've got the website and Facebook is probably our most active of social media. We are also on Twitter and LinkedIn. It's a great way to stay connected to the issues. You know, we're posting information just about the different, you know, things that we're dealing with, but we're also posting about the activities that we have going on. You know, the Capital campaign, there's information there about that. Like, that's really the way to stay connected to us.
Yeah, and I think we really love working with the college. I think that's, I know last year someone did a talent show with actually the proceeds coming to us. I think the Women's Center? Anyway, but just different events that we're invited to be part of, educational events on campus or things that are around advocacy. We really appreciate.
Well, thank you so much for your time and input. It was great having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.